Now, we are going to something completely different. We're going to bees. The dark European honeybee, known here as the black bee, was found across Europe, but it's now no longer prevalent. But it's doing all right here in Ireland. The black bee population is considered pure and distinct, and they're well adapted to living in our climate, or what they thought was our climate. Their breeding season is short to fit in with our summers. Well, 3 years ago, Hannah Quinn Mulligan started to keep them on her farm in Limerick. By the end of June, the hives were doing very well in the sun. But of course, the rain in the last month has caused problems. She took advantage of a dry spell in more recent days and went down to the hives to see how they're getting on.
You don't expect to find starving honeybees in late summer. At least I didn't. But walking across the garden one morning, I could tell that something was up. From one little hive, I could see one wasp and then another wasp. A sly interloper, zooming in and out. A slight puff of smoke, then another to calm the insects. And gently, I prized off the lid. I had to take a moment and take in the sight. Sharp, black and yellow wasps were guzzling the remaining honey in the hive, while under the wooden frames there were bodies of hundreds of little black bees curled up on top of each other, motionless in the fetal position. Upset, I shooed the wasps away and close up the hive. I tell myself that perhaps because it had been a nuke, a baby hive, that it had a slimmer chance of survival. The last time I checked the hives was 4 weeks ago, when they were laden with honey. But since then, the broken weather meant that they couldn't get out. They ate all their honey reserves and grew too weak to fight off any wasp attacks. But going to the next hive and the next ones, the ones that should be stronger, I'm met with the same eerie silence. There is something not just sad, but gut-wrenchingly apocalyptic about finding dead bees. Seeing their little bodies, usually so busy with industry in summer months, motionless, makes it feel like something has been broken. Something is off kilter. And I'm not able to fix it. I'm not able to bring the bees back. Walking on, my final hive stands out amongst the others. It's painted a garish Barbie pink and stands three stories or supers tall. It's a skyscraper of the bee world. Last time I inspected it, it was teeming with industry, with honey and comb and baby bee making all taking place at rapid speed simultaneously. Nervously this time, I lift off the lid. My whole body relaxes because finally there's that familiar deep hum of hundreds upon hundreds of bees. Easily 60,000. But the tone of their buzz was different. As a farmer, you instinctively know the sweet, soft, cooing low that a cow will make to her calf, compared to that bellow of fear or hunger she can make. Now, I won't claim to be a bee expert, but this was the first time that the hum of the bees didn't sound happy to be busy. It sounded panicked. It sounded like time was running out. Carefully, I restored the layers of the hive and tipped the sugar syrup that I'd made into the bee feeder at the top. The little black bodies swarmed into the feeder immediately and eagerly sucked up the syrup. When I returned later in the day, the hive was quiet. A hard rain had started to fall that afternoon and the bees were unable to get out. And nearly all of that sugar syrup that I'd given them earlier was gone. Now, there's a school of thought in beekeeping that you shouldn't mollycoddle bees. You should let weaker hives die and let stronger hives remain. Those are the laws of nature. But nature has been through a funny time this year. And while I can live without a harvest of honey, I can't afford to lose my bees. So I'm choosing to feed them and mollycoddle them all through this summer, autumn and winter, and well into next spring, when hopefully the rain will stop, the sun will shine, and they can fly once again.
That's Hannah Quinn Mulligan with her native black bees on her farm in Limerick. And we will be talking with another farmer in Mayo about a different species of bee after this break.
Email countrywide at rte.ie.
Welcome back. 51551 for your text. Well, before the break, we heard how the wet weather is affecting the health of honeybees on Hannah's farm in Limerick. But overall, as long as there are beekeepers like Hannah, the honeybee should do okay. It in many ways is more like livestock than wildlife, but it is our wild bee species that need our attention. And someone who knows a lot about this and who's traipsed around all the corners of Ireland surveying them is Dara Stanley from UCD's School of Agriculture and Food Science. I'm delighted to say that Dara joins us this morning. Good morning, Dara. Dara, we have 21 species of bumblebee, 75 species of solitary bees, and scientists, you scientists have been saying for a good few years that by 2030, which is not that far away, a third of them are going to be extinct. Can you give us a picture of how things are as you know it now?
Yes, so, you know, our bees are so important to the production of our food, to the reproduction of our plants, but it's not always good news when it comes to bees, and that's because we do know that certain species are in decline. So we have data from our National Bumblebee Monitoring Scheme, we have data from our red lists that shows this. Now, we have good data for some species, but we also don't know a lot about other species, so insects in general tend to be understudied. So while we do have an overall picture of decline, there's an awful lot we don't know about certain species.
The more I read about bumblebees, the more extraordinary they become. I mean, little facts like they beat their wings, I hope I'm correct in saying this, 8,000 times a minute, which is mind-boggling. And they can fly when loaded with pollen and nectar that doubles their body weight. It's just extraordinary. You've spent your professional life looking at them. Do you have a favourite species?
I have a few favourites, but my absolute favourite, it has to be the great yellow bumblebee, Bombus distinguendus, which is it's Ireland's rarest bumblebee. It was formerly found countrywide. I've been to the collections in the museum and seen specimens of it from County Carlow in the 1920s, but now it's only found in the west of Ireland and primarily only found on the Mullet Peninsula in County Mayo. But
and I think of this species as like the Marilyn Monroe of the bumblebee world. I mean, it's just extraordinary. Beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful bee. It's an absolutely beautiful bee. I sometimes call it a blonde bombshell. It's very blonde, with these lovely blonde hairs on its abdomen, on its tail, and on its thorax, and kind of its back. But it has this characteristic black stripe across its back, which is how you can tell it apart from some of our other blonde species. And it's quite a large bee in comparison to other bees. It has a long tongue, which determines the types of flowers it can visit. So it likes things like knapweeds and red clovers and flowers that have slightly kind of long tubes down to their nectar. And it's also quite a late emerging species. So some of our bumblebees will emerge in March and April time, whereas the great yellow bumblebee tends to emerge a bit later in the season, June, July, and you really kind of see its peak populations around now, coming August into September. So it's an unusual bee in some of those ways as well. And it's rare in Ireland, but also in the UK. It's only found, for example, in the north of Scotland and some of the islands.
We're going to go over to Mayo, to the Mullet Peninsula now, and join Joseph Geraghty, who is a farmer out there. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning, Ella. Good morning, Dana.
You inherited your farm in 2009. You keep sheep. You're a firefighter. You also have glamping pods for tourists there. But now you have an income from these blonde bombshell bees, don't you?
Blonde bombshells, this great yellow bumblebee project. Yeah, we have an income from that, and it helps us keep the meadows not mown, don't mow them until later in the year to provide food for the great yellow bumblebee.
There's 27 farmers over there involved. When was the first time you saw one?
First time I saw one would have been in 2020 when Dr. Karina Dingercus got in contact with me about the great yellow bumblebee project, and she had found one on my land.
And can you describe it?
Just like what Dara said there, it's a bigger bee. It's all blonde, and it has a black stripe going from wing to wing across its back. I suppose that's the best way of describing it, really.
And you still have these sort of old hay meadows that your father had as well. Is that what they like?
That's true. That seems to be what they like. I suppose my father would have farmed the farm in a traditional method, and I suppose going on then I didn't change anything really. So a lot of the flowers and grasses that they look for, like the knapweed and the clovers, kidney veg and all that, they're still intact in the hay meadows. And there's a lot of pockets of traditional hay meadow around the Mullet Peninsula and just on the edge of the town of Balmullet here where I'm located.
And for you, I mean, looking at the kind of economic side of it, is it the case that the fact that you're the last spot in Ireland to have this population, do people come and you know, stay in your glamping pods? Is it part of your sort of tourist offering as well or not?
Well, with us here at Gertie's Farm Near Pods, we do offer that, and a lot of the tourists that come and stay, we can educate them on the different biodiversity that's in the area. Along with the Great Yellow Bumblebee, we have Life on Macker, and we have Birdwatch Ireland, and we can educate them, and they come and go then. Like they tell other people, and then they come to the area as well. So there is an ecotourism patch with it too, you know.
Dara, why have they declined so much?
So it's likely a combination of factors. Climate is potentially a factor in this particular species, but primarily one of the key drivers is probably loss of habitat. So as James was saying there, they really like hay meadows. They really like species-rich grasslands. And these grasslands have declined nationally over time, probably as we've moved from haymaking to silage production over the last century or so. For example, as I said, I've seen specimens of this bee from the 1920s from County Carlow, but over time it's moved further westwards. It was found in the Burren up until about 10 or 20 years ago, and now the only populations are around the Mullet, and there's been a few sightings in the north of Achill Island, which is quite exciting too. So it's primarily the loss of the flowers that these bees feed on. We don't know much about this species in terms of where it nests, and actually trying to find bumblebee nests is very, very difficult. Some people have tried in the UK to use sniffer dogs to find them, but it's hard. So we don't know much about the nesting requirements for this species, but it's likely that there's been issues with nesting as well. And another potential factor is disease. And again, we don't know much about disease in this species, but we do know that bees suffer from disease. We do know that disease can pass between managed bees, for example, honeybees and wild bees. So that could be a factor in it as well. So it's likely climate, habitat and maybe disease.
I mean, I know over there in the Mullet, there's been so many people involved in this species. Dave Sutterby from Birdwatch Ireland, Mayo County Council, Peter Gill there. You've had agricultural advisors Noel Walsh. You've also had Balmullet Tidy Towns. There seems to be a whole energy behind this species. And then hopefully for farmers, they're obviously getting paid through this European Innovation Partnership, but also tourism. And Dara, for you, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? The idea that there could be an economic stream for farmers alongside the likes of getting money from the government to farm in a certain way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something we could probably do more of in Ireland is celebrate what we have in terms of our biodiversity. And yeah, I'm sure it's something that could be explored further. I mean, just to mention the Great Yellow Bumblebee EIP was a pilot EIP project, but only received funding for a very short time. So, you know, I think if we want these schemes to become longer term and we want them to be successful, you know, really they have to take place over a longer time period. So it'd be nice to see these things continuing.
And one of the pressures on bees, as we know, is pesticide use. And in your work, you've attached in the past radio tags to the back of bumblebees and you fed half of them low levels of pesticides. When you did that, what did you find?
Yes. So you know, when people think about bees and pesticides, they often think about the fact that pesticides can kill bees. And when I talk about pesticides, I'm primarily talking about insecticides, but fungicides and herbicides can also potentially cause issues. But what really we've begun to discover through research over the last 10 years or so is that it's not often the concern that pesticides might directly kill bees, that pesticides can have what we call these sublethal effects. So they can affect how bees behave. So some recent work that was published by one of the PhD students, Alison, in my lab, showed that when we exposed bumblebees to low levels of lambda-cyhalothrin, which is our most widely used insecticide here in Ireland at the moment, that those bees were less good at... They were less active, first of all, and they were less good at bringing pollen back to their nests. So, yeah, we find that the pesticides mightn't necessarily kill bees outright, but they can have these low-level effects, which will ultimately affect how they can reproduce and how they can survive. And
so for farmers, don't spray, for example, in the middle of the day when it's sunny.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is you say relatively simple, but when you hear about the complications of doing anything in agriculture at the moment,
indeed,
with the weather, obviously there are limitations too. But some of our other work by a student in my lab called Arian has looked recently at yeah, times of day and how active pollinators are. And really between 10 and 6 or 10 and 5 is the most active time of the day for pollinators. So often the conditions for spraying pesticides and the conditions for optimal pollinator activity are the same. You need warm weather with low wind and so on and so forth. So, you know, if we can apply pesticides earlier in the morning, which is usually better than later in the evening from an operational point of view, that can reduce the direct contact of pollinators with pesticides. So the only thing is we don't quite know then about the residues those pesticides leave behind. So we do need further research on these mitigation measures and ways that we can reduce the impacts of pesticides on bees where they need to be used. Because, for example, you might spray pesticide in the morning, but there could be residues that stay on the plants or the flowers in the middle of the day when pollinators are active. But we just don't know enough about that yet, unfortunately.
OK, well, it's very, very heartening to hear the farmers out in the Mullet doing what they can to enhance this beautiful bee species. Dara Stanley, thank you so much for joining me this morning. And Joseph Geraghty over there in Mayo, thank you very much indeed.